How are we doing, everybody? Welcome back to the Sean Atwood channel. I would like to apologize, everybody, apologize to everybody. This wasn't a guest being late. This was a link being sent out that I had updated wrongly. So I want to apologize to everybody who's been waiting. Thank you to Ronald as well for being here and sticking around. Before we get into all of the main topic, Ronald, who are you? Tell us a little bit about you. What's your story? Let's get to know you. Let's let the audience get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit.
I love it. So I started, my career started in the United States Marine Corps. Once upon a time, I was originally an infantry officer, then became a lawyer for the Marine Corps. One of the most important parts of that job was, of course, we were operating in Afghanistan and Iraq at the time. I had the opportunity to go over there and see the United States waged war, worked in detention operations. Well, after spending some time working with the federal government, I decided to spend some time defending people against it, and then became a federal criminal defense attorney, mostly standing up against the government in federal courtrooms around the country. And right now, other than my show off air, which gives me an opportunity to get out and talk to normal folks about how the U.S. Operates in the legal space, I have the opportunity to get in courtrooms and defend real people against our system of justice, and hopefully find some fairness in the process. That's it. Now, through all of this, obviously, I've gained an ability to investigate complex cases, including the Epstein case, including the Clintons and their cases. And I've provided some of those insights to folks, put out two books, one, Truth and Persuasion, most recently came out. That's more about how we navigate this digital space with all the information that we have. It's a bit philosophy focused as well. And then the prior book, Fight the Feds, which is really just kind of my piece de resistance against the government, some of the ways that they've treated the people in the cases that I've been able to analyze. So that's me in a nutshell.
Well, damn. What was the transition of going from being serving your country, first of all, at a pretty high level of military, right, to then seeing realities that didn't sit right with you, to then switching completely to defending and going after these injustices? Like, how that transition must have been a hurdle.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, patriotism is really the cause of all of this. Like 9/11 happens. 9/11, I watched the towers go down as a freshman in college. Yeah. And I went right into the recruiter's office. That's what brought me to the Marine Corps. Just,
wow.
Just rank patriotism. I'm in there that day. I'm like, this is my war. Let's go get some. Wow. Well, that recruiter did something that was, I think, quite profound and changed the course of my life. Ironically, a similar thing happened to my father. He said, you're in college. You're getting your education. You should be an officer. He said exactly this. I'm going to have plenty of bodies in these seats today. You can take your time and become a leader. And I suggest you do that. So I worked up this very lengthy package to become an officer. And of course, that means drinking as much Kool-Aid as you possibly can, right? I became one of those guys. And then eventually an arm of U.S. foreign policy overseas for the Marine Corps. The problem with all of that is, and I you know, love my brothers and sisters in harm's way. My brother's a helicopter pilot for the Army right now, and my sister was over in Afghanistan in a different division, but near me. My friends and family have served, and I love them for it. But the reality is that the people in power, they sometimes get a little crazy when they're unchecked, right? They sometimes send us into harm's way for their own benefit, and I think that there needs to be a counterbalance to that. And I started to develop that as I was in the Marine Corps, that just standing up and clapping at the football match or the game for your country, and just waving a flag and saying anybody who we hate, you know, needs to be destroyed, is not the answer to a full functioning democracy and a good system. And what we need are people to stand up for those documents that have been created to protect us, like the Constitution, right? And so that means defending the least of us. So when I started to realize that, I started to become a bit disgruntled to some of the stuff that we were doing overseas, right? We had the Abu Ghraib scandal. We had Benghazi, Hillary Clinton's actions in preventing the rescue of an American ambassador and hanging him out to dry. We had very, very significant issues that happened because the people in power weren't protecting the least of us. And so I was happy to jump on the other side. And now I love those unpopular issues where the American public is swayed strongly one way, but where I have to stand up and say, you know, no, we need to look at this a different way. The Jeffrey Epstein scandal being exactly that, one of the biggest distractions that we're all not properly understanding. And if we truly understood it, we'd be questioning the people in power a lot more.
Well, do you know, it's interesting. Like, something went viral in America the other day about a Jeffrey Epstein game online, right? It's, I won't say the name just in case any kids are, whatever, right? But we're talking about a game that you've got to survive five nights on the island, right? And the outrage about it, bro, it's, we're not even, it's just, it's not, it's just dumb foolery, right? It really is. Yeah. There's no traumatic anything in it. It's very much Five Nights at Freddy's ripoff style jump scare experience, right? But the outrage over this game seemed to surpass the outrage over the files, okay? Like, where's the national broadcast of why is no one in court yet, okay?
Yeah.
Like, why is that not the reaction? Why is it that schools are having their systems shut down because kids can access a flash game online, right? Now, sure, schools should make sure kids shouldn't be able to access any flash game or HTML5 game online, 100%. But it seems like the outrage is always misplaced with a situation like this.
Oh, I'm with you. And you know, we can go to some of the, look at the French post-war philosophers for this. I spend a lot of time in philosophy because it keeps me grounded with how to view the world right now. And there's a concept called hyper-reality, which is all throughout my last book, Truth and Persuasion. But the idea of hyper-reality is that the thing that we often face is the copy of the copy of the copy in our world. Let me give you an example that I write about in the book, online poker. In 2000, there's this guy, Chris Moneymaker. He wins the World Series of Poker. Up until the time that he sat down at that table at the World Series, he had only operated online, only done online poker. So he wins. Was he a plant? I don't know. But then everybody who was doing online poker at the time, internet was first really coming out, they jumped to the tables and started winning the World Series of Poker. The game of poker changes as a result. Now the people who are winning are the people gaining experience online. Then we start to see online poker change and become more widespread. And then we start to see the game of poker fundamentally change. Well, let's look at the, that's hyper-reality. When the copy of the copy, it changes the reality. So Jeffrey Epstein is a person who did bad things, right? But now he has entered the hyper-real space and we're seeing spin-offs of Jeffrey Epstein all over the place. One of those being the game. Now, you or I can't understand Jeffrey Epstein. We try to look through the Epstein files. We try to figure out what happens. That's what everybody's been focused on doing. But we never really truly understand the issue with Jeffrey Epstein. And we can't do anything about it because he's no longer here. So what do? We spin off these copies of this idea. We manipulate it. And then we do something with those copies that starts to change the reality of who Jeffrey Epstein is. So this concept that this is all about, I want to be careful of what we say, but this is all about trafficking, let's say.
Transporting.
Yeah, this transporting. Is all about transporting, yeah. Is not really the case, but we've taken on that reality and we've manipulated it because that's something that we can be outraged about. That's something that we can do something about. So we're manufacturing our own outrage to deal with how we answer this Jeffrey Epstein dilemma. Yep. You see a game spun off, right? And it is rifling through the schools. It's just another spin-off of this entire equation. I hope that makes some sense. It's a complicated concept.
It sounds weird, but the transportation and the PDF stuff and the abuse is the easy part of the Epstein files to understand. Like, we all understand what that is. It's the CEO insider trading, fingers in like crazy sciences, bro. Like, that's the stuff that needs dialed in on, because we've got lists of, we literally have celebrities and elites' names discussing PDF file stuff. Their names are there, okay? They should be getting dragged into court. We should be, but people need to be dialing in on the bigger picture here, because what's your take on this this Epstein lookalike guy that's just popped up in America? He was videotaped in the car. He's got like a really, somebody in the side chat will tell me his name. It's like something, something Pete, right? And he looks like Epstein. His teeth are like Epstein's, right? And it got me wondering for the week before about, it would make more sense to have people, loads of doubles of Epstein, loads of lookalike Epstein's, because when did the man sleep? How did he achieve this level of global evilness if it's just one guy? Yeah. And if I was Epstein, I would have had a fake Epstein be the face of Epstein, right? Have him Epsteined, okay? And then now I'm just Palm Beach Pete, okay? I'm just Palm Beach yeah. Pete that kind of looks like Epstein with the same teeth. Don't nothing to see here, because that would be the great allure of the evil mind of Epstein. He had a meeting with somebody who wanted to set up a podcast and wanted to redo mm-hmm. his image through all of this. So I'm not saying he wanted to give up being a billionaire and having an island to be a podcaster, right? I'm not saying that. But I could see him throwing that sort of level of joke in people's faces. What's your take on the possibility of Epstein being a title and there being more maybe lookalikes or individuals willing to step into the role?
Well, we know he wanted to copy himself, but I don't know that he had that technology. I think that is seeing Mother Mary in our toast, honestly. You know, mm-hmm. we've got a lot of people with their heads on a swivel looking out.
I agree with that too.
Jeffrey Epstein, right? You see what you want to see. Hey, mm-hmm. that may seem real to you, but is it true? I don't know. Well, let me tell you this. I've met and known a lot of evil people. I've defended some people who others would call evil. And yep. I've realized that none of them are really that smart. Listen to Jeffrey Epstein talking to Steve Bannon. I watched the whole, 3-hour interview. Nothing intelligent was really discussed during that yep. conversation. And Steve Bannon's a pretty smart guy, arguably.
Is that where he calls him the smartest person in the room? Is that interview?
I believe so. Jeffrey Epstein is pseudo smart. He's not an intelligent guy. He's pseudo smart. Right. What he was smart on is street smarts. But here's the real story of Jeffrey Epstein, and it starts with a guy named Martin Novak. Have you heard that name come up before?
Martin Novak.
Yeah.
The name Novak sticks out in my mind, but I don't know what reason.
Harvard professor, lecturer, he wrote a book. It's called Super Cooperators. It's worth a read. And the thing about Super Cooperators and Martin Novak is, first, Jeffrey Epstein gave him like $16 million in donations to this secret lab at Harvard. I did a whole YouTube episode on it. And in this lab, Martin Novak was studying, authorized by Harvard, independently of the Harvard institution. So this lab was created outside of Harvard. Jeffrey Epstein visited it like 50 times. Now, the thing about Martin Novak and his research is, on its surface, you'd say this is nothing. He's discussing cooperation in society. But what Martin Novak was really doing was understanding the fuel that allows social media to catch fire, right? Now, there's a guy named Peter Thiel, who I'm sure all of your viewers are familiar with. He gave about $500,000 to Facebook when Mark Zuckerberg was first starting back in 2004. Right on the same day Facebook started, a CIA program was shut down, DARPA program was shut down called LifeLog. That same day, Facebook opens up with a new donation by Peter Thiel and goes public. The research that you hear Mark Zuckerberg talk about when he's talking about LifeLog, he's not talking about LifeLog, he's talking about Facebook and how Facebook was implemented. But the research is almost identical to what this guy named John Poindexter was doing at DARPA when he was creating this LifeLog program. And it's almost identical to what Martin Novak researched. The hard thing about social media is, if you get a bunch of people on Harvard campus connected on a social media program, that might work, right? But how do you understand connections between people when you're talking about billions of people? Facebook only works when you can suggest friends. That's a very important part of the algorithm. And they couldn't mm-hmm. solve that problem. So Martin Novak solved that problem. How did he do it? Jeffrey Epstein's funding. Now, why would a guy like Epstein spend $16 billion on this development? Well, first, you make a lot of money. $16 million, I'm sorry.
$16 million. Okay, well, I was going to see.
that's more than I think he has. I don't know that he made that much.
That's a fraud case. That's a spike quest.
There's a previous fraud case. He stole a bunch of money from some folks and he wanted to sprinkle it around. He wanted to use it for new technologies. But what is Epstein doing? Well, this goes a little deeper into an interview that was done by a biographer who's working for Epstein. And he talks about the connection between people, which is kind of a Kabbalah concept, as being very important. He talks about the connection between people being one of the most important things for essentially controlling society. Now, what they created with social media and the webs of information that they were able to develop created programs like Palantir and the modern day control that they have created over large swaths of society. But at the end of the day, Jeffrey Epstein, and this is kind of the whole story of Epstein, He is one of the founders of the data collection project that collected enough data about every single human being that they have now been able to manipulate elections through things like the Cambridge Analytica scandal. They now have the ability to control who becomes a world leader and who does not become a world leader. You will not see another free and fair election in the United States or any Western nation in the future as a result of what Jeffrey Epstein did. Now, what do you do? And I hate to go too long here, but what do you do when you've created this behemoth, right? You've created this guy who's so powerful, but now the power players want to use this system that's been created, this data, this energy. Well, you got to destroy the founder, right? So what do? He's got some bad habits. He's into some bad things. Well, those bad things end up getting leaked to the Orlando Sentinel. An investigation starts. And now everybody's talking about Jeffrey Epstein engaged in these activities. Nobody's talking about Jeffrey Epstein, the founder and the creator of all this stuff, who has a lot of knowledge that can destroy a lot of people. This was a hit job. This was a reputational hit job. I'm not crying any tears for Jeff, but at the end of the day, the reason that these habits came out and exploded is because they couldn't control him anymore and they decided to get rid of him. That's it.
You know, I feel no sympathy for Jeffrey Epstein either, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that didn't sit right with me, though, was why would you not just put bullets in everyone's head, burn the files, set off a bomb in the ocean that put a big wave over the island, and be like, mm-hmm. oh my God, this natural disaster's happened, all these people have died. And then it's done, right? It's done. But there is this digging up the realities. I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that these are myths, but they are making sure so much of the real business, the billion-dollar enterprises, the social medias, the sciences, they are kept dwarfed by all of the horrors. And I mean, listen, the horrors need to be dealt with, but it is very interesting how many of the people surrounding him were involved in that and business deals. And it's a case of like, well, shoving him out for the pound of flesh, right? I mean, it's completely, it's the control tactic against him. Not that he was a nice guy, all right? In no way are we defending Jeffrey Epstein. We're just two guys on the internet having a discussion about how the powers that be like to do bullshit with our lives, okay? And that's the truth, because it did feel like, well, he's gone too far, we need to take him down. Why the hell would you, if you're all part of that, release those files? Why would you even mention the files? Do you see what I'm saying? So
I'm with you.
Interesting conclusion on that one, because
well, let's get you there. Why does this happen this way? There needs to be a changing of the guard, right? So the old political institution, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, you know, some of our senators that have still stuck around, they're about to be fossilized in office at this point. Those are the types of people that made deals with folks like Jeffrey Epstein to get into power. But then you have the new tech oligarchs. You've got Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance is definitely a part of that. If you have a complete changing of the bathwater here, right, you have this one institution that can take down all of those other people, well, then you're going to use it if you're the tech oligarchs, right? If you're Alex Karp, you're Peter Thiel, if you are J.D. Vance, if you're Donald Trump, who was able to be put in power by Peter Thiel, then you want all of those people wiped away. What are the Epstein files doing right now? Well, they're changing the hell out of the bathwater. Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation was created by Jeffrey Epstein. There's no secret about that. Alan Dershowitz writes about that in Jeffrey Epstein's sentencing memo. They're being investigated right now. Nonprofit fraud that Jeffrey Epstein created across the country and internationally, the system of creating 501c3s, he did this with the Gates Foundation, he did this with others, was created by Jeffrey Epstein. Those people who made money and got power that way, done. Doge swept the nation as soon as Trump came into office for the sole purpose of gathering evidence against those types of fraud schemes. You're saying not a lot of people have ended up in court? That's because nobody connected the dots to Jeffrey Epstein. The reality is, there's going to be massive takedowns of the nonprofit fraud system and the power center that exists in the United States because of the Epstein files. So why does this happen? Why don't you just, you know, put bullets in people's heads and move on?
Well, metaphorically speaking, YouTube, I should say. I meant to say that earlier. Yes, metaphorically speaking. Yes.
Maybe we could say that. Why don't we just kick some sand on their shoes and move on?
That's a much better way of putting it. Yes.
Well, the reality is that this will be the ever-flowing well that the new tech oligarchs get to put down any old power center. And that's something that they would really like to see happen. So that's why it's happening. Mm.
Yeah, it's where do you stand with Trump and all this, right? Because I think a lot of people, because this is the way I see it, he's either going to be literal savior of the world or Hitler too. There's no middle ground. I don't see a middle ground. Yeah. I think it's either one or the other, right? And
I don't know if we could say Hitler, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, the worst possible person you can think of, because I don't see a middle ground. I really don't. I just don't know where he sits in it all, because we've got, you know, the prince who's now no longer a prince who was linked to Epstein. We've got Trump. We've got so many people linked to him, right? And what do you think? Where do you think he lies with it all? And I mean, again, it may be putting you on the spot a little bit, but it's
no.
I'm torn. Like, I'm torn right now, because I made jokes, bro. About 3 weeks before the Iran war, I was like, well, isn't this a surprise that America hasn't went to the default, let's start a war for a distraction? I said, you know, they've whipped out aliens, they've whipped out invading Greenland, they've whipped out all these things, and then they just defaulted back to, let's go blow some stuff up as the distraction, right? When aliens aren't enough, when the president says, we'll tell you about the aliens if you just ignore the files, okay? We didn't actually say that, but we know what you're saying. And everyone goes, nah. Like, that's wild, you know? And I feel like that's what the world did.
I think my take on Trump is that he's a puppet at this point, right? I mean, and you could even say the thing about that former German dictator whose last name starts with an H. You could maybe say that about him as well. I mean, he created a machine, yes, but that machine started rolling and he could not stop it. He didn't have the power to stop it. And my concern is that Trump has created a bit of a machine that he may not have the power to stop. And in fact, the liberal elites have created a machine that allowed Trump to be in office that has caused something that may not be able to be stopped. And this is all momentum that is going right now. Now, does Trump have the ability to say, no, I won't attack Iran, when he's made a lot of deals to get into office that kind of require him to stand up for Israel? I don't think so. I think that he is absolutely, and maybe they arrest me right now and rip me off of the show, I don't know, for saying this, but I think he's absolutely under the thumb of the tech oligarchs. I think those are the people that we need to watch out for. Those are the people that hold the power. They'll protect him as long as they need to use him until they instill somebody else in power.
Yeah.
But we know that Trump is not the guy. He's the guy who the guy put out there to be president for now. And who's that guy? That's somebody like Peter Thiel. And that's some of the other tech oligarchs that we currently see operating in the United States right now. Yeah. That's my take.
It's crazy, man. Like the tech giant, the fear that everyone has about, you know, AI, and people get biblical with this stuff, bro. Like, people get real biblical with this stuff. And, you know, I've got a very interesting relationship with AI, because from a creative standpoint, it's helped me do projects where without tens of thousands of dollars of budget, I wouldn't have been able to achieve those projects, right? But if you're like a multi-million dollar, billion dollar company and you're firing people to replace them with AI, that's where I think we need to really address how wide a scope things are allowed to replace humans moving forward, because we're at a stage where everything's going to be replaced, bro. Okay. Like, we've went from the burger flipping jobs to, Uber driver jobs. These jobs are going to start disintegrating too. And where do you think the line should be drawn for AI not replacing, but assisting us, if that makes sense?
Yeah, this is going to cause a huge problem. I just did an episode recently about Claude and its issues with the United States government. We dropped, just some quick numbers, we dropped 5,000 bombs, I believe, during the opening phase of the war in Iran, if we're calling it a war. I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say here, but 5,000 during the start of the Gulf War. I think we had 70 sorties on the shock and awe campaign that we had. So that was called shock and awe. Well, this is now artificial intelligence basically running our targeting cycles. Now, as a military officer who did targeting, can you work up 5,000 target packages in a day? Absolutely not. That's impossible. We're using AI to take out people right now. And so, you know, we're using it in our daily life, but right now we've got Anthropic and other AI entities using large data servers to make targeting decisions and engage in those operations. That's just not a secret and it's not controversial. So where do we draw the line? Well, first, everybody should understand that the military application that we have for AI will always be stronger than what we have the availability to utilize, yeah. Right? So the first things first, we are feeding the machine that gets stronger, and the strong machine is not able to be used by us. It is only able to be used by our leaders against other folks. What does that cause? Well, you've got two superpowers, let's say. You've got China and the United States. Let's just say those are the two. Well, each side needs to have a competitive advantage over the other because we're essentially in a Cold War. So you have to let your AI get crazy and out of control and unfettered and uninterrupted by humans, because otherwise you're not going to be as fast as the other guy, right? So damn. China and the United States are in a nuclear arms race. Now, we used to be able to rely on something called mutually assured destruction.
Just so that I'm hearing you clear. Yeah. We're in a race between countries for who can build the more dominant evil AI to do their military bidding. Just so I'm understanding what you're saying.
1,000%.
Okay, now please continue with what you were saying. Yeah.
Like, sneak preview, I just did an episode about Iranian drones flying over U.S. nuclear bases that couldn't be intercepted at all. That just happened over Louisiana. You can Google it right now, March 9th to the 15th. AI generated. Iranian drones flying over American nuclear bases, Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. You can't run operations like that without those drones operating autonomously, and those drones use artificial intelligence. They can hide out for as long as they need to, and they can launch when they want to, and they're not radio controlled. They are independently operating drones. We know they're not radio controlled because you can't get a signal from Iran into the United States to control the drone. So it's making decisions on its own.
So the drones are powered by AI. This wasn't a false flag AI generated scenario. You're saying these tiny murdered drones have left one country, flown over the sea, and are now just running, just making decisions, flying
about. I don't know that they left a country. They could have been hiding in the back of a van.
They could have been hiding in the back of a van. Oh, they were definitely hiding in the back. Of course, they didn't leave in our country, dumbass. They were launched here. Aha, bro.
It's possible, right? So what's going on with AI? I mean, it's not just what we see on our computer with ChatGPT. AI can now have the ability to create something. You 3D print it in the back of a van in Illinois. It flies out. Maybe you have some humans install it or put it together. Because maybe that's still necessary, but it flies into the air and it goes over Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana, and it can cause an immense amount of damage. That's where we are right now, and that's what our opponent is doing. So who's at this point, we're at a scenario where everybody's fingers on the trigger. The technology is just getting more insane. We have a power grid at stake. We have crumbling infrastructure. I think that we are a Cuban Missile Crisis times 1,000 right now in terms of existential threat to the United States and other countries. Yeah, it's hard to hear.
I know how technology and AI and 3D print, and I'm well versed, right?
Yeah,
we are literally talking about downloading a piece of code, going and buying a Raspberry, it's like module for writing computer coding on, 3D printing a shell, slapping it on a drone. And then, you know, whatever nastiness you want to apply, right? There's drones that can drop stuff. And if you're talking about terror attacks, right? And those drones are only going to be on a GPS map coordinates of, say, you know, Disney World, for example, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then a fleet of them went over and they all dropped a tiny little bit of nasty. That is bonkers, bro. Like, I'm not going to lie. I bet you, Ronald, within the next 24 months, that's a plot of a blockbuster movie. I'm telling you right now.
I was just going to say that. Just go watch Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, right? That's where we are, right? You're right. It should be the plot of a drone blockbuster movie.
I'm telling you, Ronald, it's going to be. Yeah. And when you and I realize that our minds are going to connect around the world, and I'm going to be like, oh my God, what's happening? I'm telling you, because that is
it's
Cuban Missile Crisis times a million. You're right.
I mean, I just told my audience to like stay safe and take care of your families today because of how troubling this is, right? I hate to deliver this kind of news, but who's going to stop it? The question always remains. We put this thing in place. AI is spiraling out of control. Are we going to stop it with internal legislation in the United States or Canada or the UK that restricts our ability to have this technology? No, because the only way that technology gets better is because the people feed it. So are our leaders in place ever going to say, restrict your use of AI? No, because you are training it. You're making it better every single day.
Yeah.
Every time you log into ChatGPT and use it, you're making it better.
But they're just going to make tiny counter murder drones that think for themselves that go hunting other murder drones. We're going to have this mad moment in history where things go bananas. Okay. From 3D printing and like drones, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not being funny. Anyone that wants to really lose some sleep tonight, just go and have a look at the Russia and Ukraine war.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit dependent on drones. And these ones, some of them have got fiber optic cables that go for 2 miles so that they don't get picked up on some kinds of radar. And now we're talking about
flown.
Right.
Yeah. Those are being flown by an operator. Now that's Stone Age.
Bro, right? Oh man.
Yeah. Now you just need to give it the ability to find and select a target, which is what we've already done in Iran. We allowed drones and rockets to select their own targets based on a menu. We said there's a human in the loop, but they are not analyzing everything, which means we've got some problems. Now, will that be able to target safer than military human operators? Maybe, but that's never really the point, right? The reality in warfare is first, we should stop it at all costs, unless it's needed to prevent actual warfare, right? That's the first thing. But then second, if warfare has to happen, it must be for a particular political objective. But what's the political objective here? I mean, let's stop and ask our leaders, what are you trying to gain in Iran? Their nuclear capability, I think, is gone. So what now? We're fighting to fight. We're fighting because defense contractors need to use their equipment overseas. Not for any real purpose, not for any real societal benefit. It's shit. Bro,
do you know what, right? We all know the military are off their nut. We all know the government's off their nut, okay? 3D printing murder drones in the back of a van, right?
Yeah.
Right, that's slightly more pressing, right? We're never going to, I'm going to have at least 2 beers tonight just because of this conversation. Okay, I want you to know, I'm just telling you now, because I can see the whole process of this being put together from a nasty terror point of view. Mm-hmm. And bro, there's drones that you can get on Wish that are this size.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if your whole, if you want to go out to and fly it outside, no problem. But if you're in like a shopping department and this thing, wow.
Wait till the first mass incident occurs. Nah,
let's not wait. Let's put up big nets. Okay. Forget about a wall, bro. Let's put a big old net up because that's crazy.
Maybe we could just all agree on an EMP and just rock it back to the Stone Age and go back to living in the woods.
If we're all doing it, I'm so in. Okay, if everyone's involved, as long as there's not like mega power elite island that's left off the coast somewhere where they all go to, and they're all like, ha ha ha, fools. Yeah. Right? Do you know what I'm saying? I would go back. I would do that. Now listen, you've blown my mind and side quested me. So I'm gonna pull you back to your main topic and let you carry on with this because that was a lot to deal with, Ronald. Just so you know, that was a lot to process there. Okay. Yeah. So with this heavy involvement, the clear indication that these major powers in social media have control over governments and are making decisions, allegedly. It sometimes it feels more comforting to think that it's vampiric bloodlines that have been here for centuries that have got a tight grip on the world. They're here too. I don't worry about that. But to think that there's billionaires who are feeding off of what we see as social media, harboring our information, learning our tactics for better to control us all. We've all kind of known that, right? But that was before the AI came along. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they got us hooked on this stuff when we were just worrying about them selling our emails. Okay. Do you know what I'm saying? But now, bro, you can see, and you know what else it is? Somebody else said this to us. Like they get you used to something, then they change it. They get you used to something. I think you just said that. Actually. They get used to something, then you change it and change it. And it's like, do you remember the iPhone 1? No camera.
Yeah.
No GPS. Yeah. It was just a funky phone that you could touch the screen of. Then along came the camera. Then came the GPS, right? And then came this and this and this. And they get us used to it. And before you realize it, you have the most sophisticated tracking device in the world in your pocket with a microphone and an HD camera on 24/7 with the terms of service that says, we may spy on you, just cause.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Look, there's some saving grace. I guess we talked about some crazy stuff, but maybe there's a little bit of good news. And some, a lot of this is in my book. It's not just a restatement of the problem. It's not just a continued, we're all effed, right, off into the future. But I think that there's a saving grace here. Humanity has always survived. Back from the days with the Neanderthals, we were able to band together and figure things out. Well, you know, you've seen, and I'm sure a lot of your audience has seen, that there's a bit of a growing sickness in us, that this constant attachment to phones and technology, and granted, we're all here on YouTube talking, but this is a bit more of a real form of communication than most people get on their daily feeds. At least this is communication instead of the symbols that we normally get. But there's been a sickness. People are somewhat disgruntled. They're just not feeling well. And people start to feel well when they start to break themselves off of some of this technology and engage a little bit more responsibly.
Yep.
I mean, if there are people out there who hypothetically, you know, like the taste of fungus or maybe how it makes them feel, certain types of fungus, I would say, you can see in some of those studies, like psilocybin and whatnot, that there's an automatic resistance to technology and the speed of the life that we have here. Mm-hmm. So there does seem to be a common human vein that always wants to find its true north, and that doesn't involve this hyper-real system that we have. So what do we do about that, right, as human beings? We've got this world going crazy. It's going out of control. Well, you know, spending a little bit more time in selective about your communication, reading the books that were written years ago before this stuff existed, staying grounded and rooted in whatever you like to do, whether it's going camping, getting out to nature, that can provide a bit of a refreshing take. And end of the day, I really do trust that humanity will find its way through this. Just like any major change, industrial revolution, we've got people getting their arms ripped off in factories. We've got dangers and hazards that occur with any change in society. That's what we're going through right now. We're going to find a way to deal with it. I mean, what is that way? I think that religion, spirituality, we're going to start to see a resurgence of it because of people needing to get better from the sickness that's sort of spread. So I do look forward to seeing that day happening, to see people finding a bit more north and a bit more grounded.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people call it the Great Awakening. People finding their frequencies and all this stuff. And I agree. And I think there's a reason why 1% controls the whole world. And there's definitely knowledge that they have that we don't. And it's a deep, deep subject. So we'll skim over it just for now, Ronald. But I completely am in the same park as you. I think people are realizing that there is true evil, right? And evil should not exist in this world. When we have good and bad, I call it the stag eating the wolf eats the stag, right? Good for the wolf, bad for the stag. That's the balance of the world, right? And there's a lot of imbalance through fear, through like the corporation, the capitalization of religion in the West. And it's crazy because there's so much that we think we're the same in America and the UK, right? And there's so many things that differ. Like I learned about mega churches, right? Through documentaries and things like this. And then I told the story the other day. I've spoken to somebody who was part of a mega church. They felt lost. They were this. And then when they went for help, they were just laughed at. And it goes against sort of everything that you would expect from a religion. And it's scary because lost people or people that are in a time of need, they gravitate to the people who have made these promises to them. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk to MK Ultra survivors and about how they are given, you know, these, you know, deity figures or figures of responsibility who then go in to do terrible things to them to shatter their impressions of them, it's kind of the same vibe when you're lied to and then destroyed by the thing that is put in front of you that you seek justice or hope or guidance from. It's yeah. a dirty, dirty plan that they've got. They really have. And it's warped a lot of people. It really has.
Oh yeah. It's tragic. You know, I think that we search for a guru and that's what we see in the mega churches. Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of those people are kind of outsourcing that aid to an entity that maybe they don't fully trust, but at least they get some good out.
Right.
Because of the community. I went mm-hmm. to a retreat down in Costa Rica recently where it was a spiritual retreat, but the owner of that spiritual retreat was just like sort of your general capitalist. But the cool thing about it was he knew enough to stay the hell away, right? He knew enough to let the people who know and care about other people be the ones leading the classes and kind of guiding people forward.
Wow.
And this was a place where we didn't use a lot of technology and we spent a lot of time talking to each other, and it was a very beautiful place, but it had to be put together by somebody. So my hope is that those institutions that we start to see that do well aren't the mega churches, Austin with his beautiful teeth smiling at you saying, give me $100,000. You know, we're starting to see some of those places get indicted, right?
Bro, some of them, when you sign up, you sign up a percentage of your wage. And I'm it's crazy. And then we have people like Pastor Dave, who is mm-hmm. the opposite of all of this, you know what I'm saying? And yeah. he's, you know, building ranches for people to be able to get better food. He's just buying a prison for kids that have been not for the kids to go to prison, but he's renovating it all. It's incredible. Yeah. And that's when you dial it right back to a small group wanting to do good that have got a lot of capability of doing so. And I think when we consolidate so much into one place, and it's the same with the business world, right? If the people who are selling the sugar-free drinks are the same people that are selling the sugary drinks, they're competing to outdo each other in a market they own 100% out of. So then if you apply that to the same people that own the sugary drinks, right, also own the hospitals and the medical care system, your head starts to spin a bit, bro, because how do you get out of that cycle when even competing markets in fizzy drinks isn't real, bro? It's an illusion, you know? And then they just scale that up throughout society and throughout everything.
I talked about this in my book as well. You know, if you want to grab some tea, because you want to grab that at a grocery store, you love tea, you could go to Lipton, you could go to Nestle, you could go to all these different teas, about 100 different teas that you could purchase. They're all owned by mostly one company, but kind of two, a little bit. At the end of the day, you're not making a choice between companies because monopolies are just everywhere. Now, this may seem like the strangest segue in the world, but I think it's important to talk about Greenland when you raise this.
Let's
you
mentioned do it. It earlier. We love a side quest, Ronald, as we call them here. We love a side quest.
So it is tangentially related. So you've got now a society that's completely fragmented. It's going to get even more fragmented, right? We're not having fair elections anymore. The two-party system in the United States isn't really a thing. People don't trust it. And so what's going to happen? The social institutions that we saw where people bind together in their political parties are breaking down, and now we have smaller fragmented groups, almost down to the individual. How do these people start to form societies of trust again? Well, it's already started. There's a group called Praxis out there, and there's others. There's nation states that are forming around simple ideas, some of them good, some of them bad. It depends on your perspective. But they're starting to develop these colonies across the world. Praxis is trying to, I think, target Greenland right now. And that was one of the reasons why people were talking about a Greenland acquisition. So you're starting to see smaller nations. And this was an idea that Peter Thiel loves, Curtis Yarvin, the philosopher who Peter Thiel and his buddies love too. They're developing these nation states where individuals can now go from their main country because they're not happy with the choices, because they're more interested in surviving in the fragmented society, and set up a new institution around different ideas. So right now the choice for a lot of humanity is, which groups do I associate with? What YouTube channel do I associate with? But it might be, what government do I associate with, and what are the principles around that? I think you're going to see the erosion of the traditional nation within the next, I would say, 50 years, but maybe 25. Mm-hmm. And you will see that replaced with these individual, smaller, organized companies, maybe inside of countries, if countries allow it, but most likely external. And we're going to start to see people moving to some very interesting places, Africa, Greenland, probably South America, to be able to accomplish this. It could be a new wave of exploration. It could be a new version of Far and Away. Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman.
Bro, it's going to be Judge Dredd with mega blocks, okay? It's going to be Judge Dredd with mega blocks. All right? True. That's what it's going to be. Because everything you're saying, you know what the really annoying thing is, right? See, when you take the evildoer's plans and you put it in the hands of somebody that could never do any evil, right? Global currency, free travel, like the right to roam the whole planet, us all like functioning as a global planet and supporting each other, even freaking like tech in your hand and a biometric arm, whatever, all brilliant, when it's not run by evil sociopath maniacs. You know what I'm saying? If I can't trust you to build an Xbox, mate, right? If I can't trust you to get the Xbox right for launch, you think you're going to stick that in my brain? Okay. Like, are you okay? Like, I can't trust you to build a console, okay, for launch, let alone me trusting you not to put a tiny grenade in my head, okay? Because I'll tell you what, Ronald, I'll tell you what, they have to make us ask for this. They've perfected making us ask for the things we don't want because we're terrified. Okay. Yeah. They're doing it with digital IDs here. And you just take that business model of fear. Mm-hmm. Oh, they've pushed back against this. Well, let's make them damn well beg for it through fear and terror over the next couple of years. You know,
do you know that war was data collection for us? That's what it was. That's why we had those wars. Early on in the Afghanistan war, Operation Enduring Freedom, and also Iraq, technology was put in place that required, they were very, very adamant, I always thought it was kind of weird, requiring us to scan the eyes of almost everybody we came across. It was called bats in hiding. Okay. We scanned everybody's eyes. We were collecting the data. And I thought, why do we really need the retinal scans on all of these people? Well, we needed to understand how they connected. Because at the end of the day, governments are very scared of people and individuals, and they need to make sure that people can be put into groups and those groups can be connected and separated based on how much fear they present towards the system. And so this entire idea of identification was a way of categorizing people. Well,
I was just about to say, is this about categorizing, not identification, right?
Exactly. Now, I show up at the Delta Airlines, gate to check in for my flight, and my eye is scanned. I go into a government building to go to the U.S. Attorney's office downtown. My eye is scanned. I want to get it through TSA, and my eye is scanned, and I'm collected. You said they want us to ask for it. Our pre-check. Oh, you get to skip the long lines at the airport if you just give up a little bit of your identity, right?
There's another name for it, Ronald. It's called grooming. Okay, you're being groomed into this. Oh, well, if I give up this, it's convenient. And then before you know it, we're mole people living under the ground who never see the sun, Ronald, escaping the Terminators. Okay.
And do you know who taught us how to groom? Jeffrey Epstein and Martin Novak. They became the pros at grooming, like full circle. That's Martin Novak's research. How do you get people to beg for it? And how do you get them to give up some of their identity for the whole, and to provide this sort of information that will provide control? I mean, that some people talk about singularity. I think that's where we're getting, right? At some point, there will be no difference between the individual and the state, because everything that we see and do is so potentially manipulated by the state that we are just an arm of them. We go buy what they tell us to buy. We go consume what they tell us to consume.
Are you telling me the evildoer that did all this then wrote a book about how he did it all and then sold that book to the people who he did it to and he's still just walking about. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah. Like, yeah. Brilliant. But that, well done, humanity. We're nailing it. We're nailing it here.
That book was grooming. That book was ChatGPT so that you would read it, consume it, and participate. That book was not the military application of ChatGPT. It was not the full power. You weren't getting the full dose. There's so much more to Novak's research that they never really spoke about, which is crazy. So you go listen to every Martin Novak lecture I have. Every single lecture, he talks about the vanilla stuff, and you go, why did that cost $16 million? Why did Jeffrey Epstein give $16 million for that? Why did Harvard set up a separate lab for that? No, there's more to it. He's not giving the full story. That's the thing.
Yeah. I would love to, but sadly, I've got to lose sleep over 3D printed murder drones. Okay, that's what I've got to look. Thank you for that one, Ronald.
Out of the back of a van in Illinois.
Oh, I know, bro. Here's the thing. The scary thing is, if I was to get a $200 3D printer, right?
Yeah,
we could sit here, and before this podcast had ended, it would have printed a tiny drone that, if somebody was to choose to do so, could do some nasty things with it. But the fact that it's AI driven, right?
Yeah.
And the way that the technology is, I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about a terrorist tool that will bind itself to a GPS location. And if that location is full of Western, like, people that you're not so keen on, this is scarily, this is some wish.com terror warfare. If people want a budget level on how easy this would be to achieve.
I think the only thing that they will be able to do is outlaw, like machine guns, outlaw certain aspects of drone technology to make sure that the public can't develop them because they're so scared. But then what does that do, right? That makes sure that everybody who we don't like has, you know, the products. And I don't even know that there's a single component that you could control enough to do that. The reason we know that these drones are AI controlled, that we're flying over a Louisiana nuclear facility, is because they could not be jammed. Which means they were making decisions.
And they were making decisions. There was no signal. Right, exactly.
There was no signal to jam, right? So unless you have a targeted EMP where you can, you know, depower it and blow it out of the sky, you got nothing, you know? There is absolutely nothing. You'd fear on that.
Right, proper, mate. That's like, great. Because, but the thing is, like, it's so obvious. And, like, it's wild. And let's just all think about puppies running around a little puppy pen for a second, how they're adorable, they're cute. That's what we'll think about for a minute.
Because I think you should take a commercial break on behalf of puppies and flowers. Uh-huh. Give everybody.
Just cut to a scene of like a deer hopping through a field. Do you know what I mean? That's definitely not. Do you know, it's funny, we did that the other day as we were doing an Epstein show about a month ago. And I realized that the picture I'd put up was the coastline from an island. And they were like, no, not the view from an island, please, anything. And I was like, oh my God, they've ruined islands now. They've ruined islands. They've ruined islands. Wow.
I feel like the title of that book is A Certain Island, right? We can't talk about that, right? It's just a certain island.
And I'll be honest with you, if we can 3D print these things and then send them out from the back of a van, the government is going to have little tiny hornets with a single 2-2 round that can be launched out of them. Not that I'm pointing any, not looking at any recent people that got shot in the neck, but I've got some questions about that certain circumstance where someone got shot in the neck. Because I got some questions, but it makes sense.
The thing is,
go ahead, mate. I was just saying it. I'm still blown away by the whole simplicity and the level of terror that can come from this. And you saying, how do we control it? We can. We're there now. We're past the point of controlling it now. We really are. I mean, you know that PS5s were banned in sales in some countries because you can take them apart and reprogram them to guide missiles, you know?
Yeah.
That's a PS5. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy. But carry on, Ronald. Like, any points that you have not covered, please make sure we do.
You talked about somebody shot in the neck, and I just think that that's such an interesting case. And again, this is one of those situations like the Epstein files where everybody went in the wrong direction. They're scanning flights to find out who left, you know, where. They're looking in the crowd to see who was part of Mossad at the time. But at the end of the day, I don't know if you heard about the Jezebel article where they'd hired some sort of witch to curse Charlie Kirk.
I'm sure wads of witches. I'm sure loads of witches have cursed
Jared. That's a very good point.
I'm sure loads of Christians have blessed him. Do you know what I'm saying? But I'm sure the blessings are going to outweigh the witchiness. I'm just saying, right? Yeah. In the grand scheme of things.
At the end of the day, we focus on the mechanism, right? We want to know who shot Kennedy and how it happened. We always focus on the mechanism. That always causes us to lose focus on the reason why it happened. You had a young man who was part of a massive conservative movement that was bubbling up in the United States, threatening the woke institutions that had been so ingrained. He was literally targeting campuses. And right around the time that he was taken out, he was getting funding by some of the largest destabilizing, you know, individuals that would have ripped the woke agenda apart completely. Mm-hmm. He was about to win the war on college minds, very close to doing it. And as soon as they saw it happen, it wasn't, whether or not somebody was programmed to go and do it, whether or not they had mind control over a Manchurian candidate to go and do it, whether or not it was just some rogue actor, at the end of the day, it happened.
Tiny drone.
Very, very, very possible. But at the end of the day, it happened. But what it represents is that when enough power gets consolidated on an individual like that in furtherance of change, we always see them taken out of the picture, right?
Yeah.
The civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, taken out of the picture. Charlie Kirk, threatened institutions, taken out of the picture. I don't care whether it was the people in power or not. The reality is that we have a habit in the United States of when somebody who is creating a lot of change starts to surface and that change was a surprise, they get taken out. Now, sometimes that might be to cause a movement to get really big, right?
Yep.
Maybe the hope was one side wants that movement to become stronger. And that's why he doesn't need to be here anymore. But maybe the other side is those people are truly scared of that sort of existential threat. It seemed like his death benefited everybody. And I hate to say that. But it seemed like both sides used the hell out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
tragic.
It was very odd, the aftermath of it all, if I'm being honest. But I'll tell you something else, Ronald, right? If there was ever a unaliving or a event that has taken place that I feel had the perfect mix of crazy guy in the crowd saying I did it, old man whose trousers fell down, man in a room with a flashlight making it look like a gun going off, dude running across a building, did his thing blow up, is the guy behind him doing all this, giving signals, right? It was like, give the internet everything they need to have every distraction possible in this facade that we're going to hand out as a random attack. Okay.
I like that idea. Yeah. I mean, it could be Mary in the toast again, right? Because there's a lot of toast. We have video angles of everything, right? It could be that.
It could be that.
Maybe the first time that we've ever really analyzed a situation. We had one grainy video for the Kennedy situation. We have 1,000 videos for this. It could be a function of that. We just have a lot of things that we can look at that we couldn't have looked at before.
Yep.
But I do. I'm really interested in the idea of like planted distractions because, I mean, first of all, you telling me that this guy put a rifle in his pants before jumping off the building? I think
And then I tell you what, go and get a broom, right, and stick it down the pant leg and see how well your knee, and then go and try and climb down a ladder. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a pretty simple experiment, kids. It's not going to end well for all you dads that have had 3 beers on a Friday and you're like, Sharon, get the ladder. Okay. It's not going to end well. You're going to fall. But
you would think a genius would have figured that out. Yeah.
And then, you know, let's throw in a trans roommate partner. Let's throw in the dad who's seen the gun. I'm sorry, right? That is the most, that's the sort of rifle that in Texas, when you sign up for a bank account, they give you one for free. Okay, was a gray plastic molded bolt action rifle, right? If it was a bright pink limited edition, like freaking, I don't know, Call of Duty 4 limited edition bolt action rifle with everything on it, I could understand how you would recognize that was your missing gun, right?
Yeah.
But
I love all these people who get on the air and say that was an easy shot. I love hearing that. I really do. But the reality is that when I was in the Marine Corps, I sat next to a couple hundred buddies for the first time, and we all pulled out a rifle that was very high quality and very well cleaned. And we all took our first shots, right? And we all tried to hit the target. And none of us shot like that, right? And then over 2 weeks of dedicated, I'm talking 12 hours a day training, breath work, the most focused stuff that the United States Marine Corps can give to reach out and touch somebody 500 yards away. We finally get it done. But we're not doing it for real. We're still shooting paper.
At I was the just end of the day,
this is a person making one of the most intense decisions of their entire life. Blood pressure through the roof, heart rate going crazy. And you get a neck shot. With the Trump guy, the guy at the top of the building at the rally, I'm being a bit vague here. Also with this, I still really struggle with the concept that those two folks got even remotely close because of the situation. I don't think that that's an easy shot at all.
Bro, like, maybe it's an easy shot if it's a paper target and if you know what you're doing on a perfect day, right? Maybe it is, okay? But in a crowded area with I'm about to take someone's life here, everything's cool, everything's fine. Do you know what I'm saying? After sneaking it in. Also, can I ask you, as a former Marine, right?
Yeah.
It would make more sense to have a weapon that can't be identified, however you unidentify a weapon, right? We're not going to go through. We're not teaching the criminals here, but you scrape off some stuff, so I've heard, right? You wear some gloves, okay? Mm-hmm. And after you take the shot, you're leaving everything and getting the hell out of there. Okay, why would you need to deconstruct? I mean, if you're doing a government job or whatever, sure, take your kit. But if you're just a crazy lunatic, it just seems more likely that you'd be preparing to leave it, okay, and make it unidentifiable. Like
that's absolutely right. I think that's if that's what you really want to do. I think disassembling and carrying something with you is a really really bad idea. But of course,
let's not judge. How many times in the Marines did you disassemble your weapon and then reassemble it under a bush and leave it there just in case you had to come back for it? Because it seems
we call that Tuesday. I mean, it's in the manual, right? You just take it apart, put it. No, I mean, I could take it apart and put it together blindfolded. I could do it in a matter of seconds. That Jake Gyllenhaal scene where he's, you know, getting mad at his guy and what is it, Jarhead, I think? And they're taking that rifle apart. Great scene. But that's actually how it's taken apart. You can do it that quickly. And that's fine. But the reality is that we're not going to put it back together and stage it. That is an incredibly strange thing to do. Well, you either disassemble it or you don't, but you don't put it back together.
But when you're talking about a combat rifle, are they not designed to come apart super quickly without a lot of tools? Yeah, exactly. Yep. Right. This thing had a screwdriver and like an Allen key and all this kind of stuff, right? Imagine if you were blindfolded and had to. I'm sure you could do it, but it would probably be a little bit of a longer process, if that makes sense. Because
I can't change the chain on my bike that quickly. I don't know how you're gonna, do that.
So with all of that in mind, I just want everyone to reflect on the very first day this happened. My take on this was, if this was a government assassin, we have evolved past human error. They're not going to send a dude out with a rifle. They're going to send a drone out with a single round in it, with an AI that calculates wind and air pressure, and the shot's going to be perfect every time. And that's exactly now what you've convinced me of with what we can do in the back of a van. So if they can do it in the back of a van, bro, it will be a drone that looks like a tiny bird. It will be a drone that looks like a hornet that flies past and just goes, and it's taken out. Why wouldn't it be, Ronald? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, if you want, the reason that this happened this way is because of the public outcry and the very visceral reaction. That's we must know that whoever caused this did this, because they wanted literally that crowd to get sprayed. That's why they do it. Yeah. Otherwise, you do it like Mossad does it. You do it quietly. You do it at night. You do it with a chemical. You do it in many different ways other than a very public situation. Yeah. If you really are going to be a government entity involved in something like this, there's a million other ways. So regardless of who wanted it, we know that they wanted it loud, right? They probably wanted it imperfect. They probably wanted it to be investigated. Yeah. They probably wanted a lot of questions surrounding it. They wanted it to dominate the news stream for a long time. They got exactly what they wanted. And the fact that we're talking about it, even now, and this happened quite some time ago.
You said the Mossad there, and I can't wind down the show without asking somebody like yourself, the pager attack, bro. That was the literal Scooby-Doo of all military. We're gonna sneak explosives into the pagers 2 years ago. Yeah. And then we're going to wait and we're gonna blow them up. Yeah. That is what?
I feel like Assad hires this like gamer who sits in his basement in like Peoria, Illinois, and he's just like,
here's what you're doing. You gotta fill the pagers.
Get some pagers. Get some pagers.
Yeah, bro.
I think it's
mental. And then the whole world just went, okay, fair dues.
Yeah.
What else is going on? I'm not being funny. Someone's called up Motorola or Samsung and went, all right, mate, it's Israel. Just so you know, we're putting in an order for a bunch of mental cases and we want you to slip in some explosives. Like that took that, something like that happened, Ronald, right? And then years later, it's put into effect, right? So
beautiful.
If they're up to things like that, no one's putting a microchip in this brain. That's all I'm saying, buddy, because I can't trust them to distribute pagers. Okay.
Yeah. The funny thing about the pager incident is that they then released something about how Mossad became dentists in the Iranian forces and then put tiny explosives in the fillings of all the dental work.
Ronald, you get one new fear unlocked per show, okay? And we're verging on another nightmare here, bro, okay?
Didn't happen, okay.
Sure it didn't happen, Ron. Sure it didn't, mate.
It didn't happen, but everybody who called their dentist the next morning was definitely on the enemy's list, right? And so all you have to do once you send a piece of news like that out there, it's called Information Operations 101, is send a piece of news out there and watch how people react to that news. So that's exactly what the Mossad pager incident did, is it created a situation in which they're all going, I don't know what's going to happen next. I have no idea what to do. And then they start floating stories that your fillings aren't safe. Maybe your morning coffee isn't safe. Oh my God. Maybe there's a bomb under the mosque. And now you can see exactly who you should care about if you monitor those communications in your Mossad. I mean, they're just geniuses. I got to give it to them, honestly. They know how to take care of business.
But can they not just be honest and have like a base that's a skull and like their helicopter flies out of the mouth? Like that would be more fitting, an evil lair. But bro,
I feel like now they have so much mind control over them. They could be like, listen, if you don't sign up on the terrorist list, we're going to explode your fillings. So we need you to come down to our offices and just put your name on the list and we'll take care of you later.
And listen. It's all fun and games now because we've not gotten to the point where we're begging for the microchips in our head. Okay. It's funny now because it's just digital ID and it's AI. But trust me, bro, when we're 50 years on and they've scaled this up and there's some new scary bomb that just sucks you out of your own arsehole and turns you inside out, and we're all terrified of that. Like, that's what's it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
That's not my kink. I'll tell you that. That's not my
bro,
kink.
Bro, listen, I'm just saying, man. Yeah. Like, what happened to the super soldiers and the discombobulator? Why are we bombing Iran if we can go into a South American country that I've forgotten the name of right now and use super soldiers and all this technology that limits civilian damage, it limits infrastructure damage? If you can just go in and go, wah, 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 and then discombobulate everybody and have, like, Jean-Claude and the rest of the Universal Soldiers go in. What are we doing in Iran just now? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, big RIP to Chuck Norris. I picture him down there just taking care of business with Iran.
I heard that he got into a fight when the Grim Reaper turned up for him and put up a bloody big show. And he was just angry at how long it took for the Grim Reaper to turn up. He was like, you're late, buddy. And that was that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Rest in peace, Chuck Norris. Yeah. What a freaking legend, bro. Well, I didn't realize it was 86, though. 86. I mean, shout out to, if you make it to 86, shout out to you.
Yeah, Highlander or whatever. Let me tell you, our childhood fears, our images for the future, probably mostly Asimov created, right? We're so much cleaner and simple. We worried about some robots. It was pretty simple stuff. You know, we had Beverly Hills Cop to watch. We had Terminator. There was always a philosophical underpinning, but this world is just getting wild. It's getting out of control. And even our nightmares are starting to be unfathomable, which, is quite scary for us. You're talking about chips in the head. The reality is that was already put into a guy. I mean, right. You know, like it's already been tested and we're going to see it more. But what about maybe not chips? What about cells? What about human cells that have been changed? New fear unlocked. So sorry. Cells that have been changed to act in a certain way, which we're very close to as well. Stem cells are one thing, but we're getting close to that sort of technology, and that could be devastating too.
They've cottoned on to, I don't want your crap in my brain, right? So I want you to imagine a gum shield, okay?
Yeah.
And the part that goes over the roof of your mouth, not like a retainer, not like a gum shield, like one of those like braces that kids have that clip up into their mouth. They've put the chip on the back of the top of that now. So they want you to be able to sit down, clip in the device, which is a lot. Yeah. Grooming! Ronald, we didn't bite. The first run of this went, you're not putting it in my head. So they've had to scale it back. So now I wonder what fun crap we're going to be sold this as that's going to ruin everything for the next generation. Because we're all going to buy it. Don't sit there and be like, oh, I'm not going to buy that. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Yeah, yeah, you are. Yeah. And I don't know why you're going to buy it yet. I don't know whether it's going to be a new way of consuming media, if it's going to be something to do with gate. It's going to be something, right? But you're all going to have one, okay? You're all, because I'm telling you now, if this was the 1960s and I was talking to Ronald about how every home's going to have a computer sat on its desk, you would all be like, shut up. People are going to be outside doing stuff. Are they?
Yeah. Not so much. No, the biggest catalyst for those sorts of things is the bureaucracy, right? In order to participate in your system of governance, you have to give up a right. You've got to get a driver's license. That driver's license has to have a chip. Oh, everybody needs a new driver's license because the old driver's license didn't work. Well, if you don't have a driver's license, you have to have an ID. And if you have a driver's license or an ID, maybe you should put it in your cell phone because that needs to be readily available because we only have RFID scanners at the airport now to utilize that. And so to participate in our bureaucracy, it's now expensive. It requires the giving up of almost every civil liberty. I love to imagine having a conversation with Benjamin Franklin or Thomas Jefferson, like, hey, sorry, Ben, I know you had some big plans. But in order to participate in my society, here's the list of what I have to give up, right? I can't park my car. I can't get on the road. I can't call somebody without interacting with my government. Mm-hmm. And those are the vehicles for the type of convenience that we've pretended we've needed, when in reality, all that ends up doing, and this is also a big part of my last book, all that ends up doing is making life way more complicated, way more time consuming, way more frustrating, and it never ends up resulting in any benefit. We wish we could check out of society, but they made it too hard. You can't. You have to utilize the things that they've made us utilize at this point.
Correct.
It's difficult.
Okay. Yeah. We have multiplied ourselves as a population past resolution. Okay.
Yeah, and that's a great way of saying it.
Bro, I tell you what, we'll get everyone in the world in a room. And then no one's allowed to leave until we all decide on a new color to paint the stripes on the road. How long? How many people starve to death, first of all, in that room? And how many of us make it out alive? Because we're not agreeing on nothing. We are not going to collectively go, purple. No, we are completely past the point of resolution. And what a bloody clever design. Because if we multiply too much, the taxes go up. Great for them. Mm-hmm. They can sit on there flicking the back of the floating turtle in their own unit, whatever mad spin you want to put on the conspiracy. They're just sitting watching us destroy ourselves through division, right? Consumption through fear. You know what I'm saying? If I'm staying in because the world's too terrible, well, Amazon, baby, let's just sit here and shop till we drop. And if you can't afford that, we got Temu, baby. Okay, you want some nuclear lead underpants? We got you covered. It only cost you 89 cents. And bro, that's where that. Do you know what? Everything's just everything, man. It's the iPhone analogy scaled up over everything. And it's fun when it's an iPhone because we feel like we have a choice, right? But when it comes down to policies, and I'll tell you this now, Ronald, if Trump pushes this to a point where enough countries are involved, he doesn't have to step down as president. If then we have an incident that is so terrible to humanity but came from a human's decision-making process, are we not going to beg for an AI overlord? To save humanity, Ronald, We need to take out the human decision-making process. I want to go and be a mole person now. I think I'm going to start digging my burrow, okay? Because I can get that kitted out. By the time you all start digging, I'll be sorted. Because what other than an asteroid that comes out of nowhere, it would have to appear within an hour of hitting us so the elites don't have any time. Other than that, how are we doing this? How are we solving this? The Stone Age needs to happen again, clearly.
I think that fragmentation of society is what will happen because nobody will be able to trust the institutions. At the end of the day, the superpowers that were formed post-World War II that became behemoths because of this vacuum that was created, those superpowers only get their power from the people, and their whole job was to keep it. That's why capitalism really aided that, religion and capitalism. Let's keep the power center. But if we start to see people check out of it, if we start to see them, we're already seeing some lawlessness. We're already seeing the government having difficulty even enforcing its own laws. You know, we had a very interesting with Brexit, you know, out in your neck of the woods, you have an entire society supporting this one idea. And then finally the people somewhat rejected it because they saw the big game that was about to be played. I know it's very controversial, but at the end of the day, we saw a large scale decision that was made against what the people in power really seem to want. If we can get that going again, like you said, you put people in a room to decide what color to paint the stripe on the road, they're not going to agree. But let's make it a little bit more serious. What if we are all facing an existential threat that really could take us out as a people? Then I think we're going to get serious about who we trust and how we trust them and what power we give them.
Are we going to believe the existential threat, Ronald? Are we going to believe the threat? Part. That's the problem, bro. This is what they've done to us. This is what they've done to us. The alien mothership coming through the clouds going over every major city would unite us, yes. But are you totally convinced that's not what all the stuff they've been spraying in the clouds is, it to turn it into like a big screen they can produce? Exactly, Ronald. That face there is the exact face my brain makes whenever time I think, should I trust them? It goes like that.
That's why they pulled aliens out just recently, bro. Right? They're like, shit, we lost the ability to control them through just about everything else. And Trump's like, time to deploy the aliens.
Since JFK, there's been a shoebox in the White House with a bit of duct tape around it that says, break in case of emergency. And it's like UFO evidence, right? And it's just been sat there gathering dust. And Trump was the one that got closest to just popping it open. But I said to everyone, I was like, you know, for a fact, all he said is proof of alien life. So that could be a bit of a rock, a meteor with a fungus on it, right? The only way the Epstein files are going away, buddy, is if you present us with 12-foot-high lizards or Nordic aliens that cure cancer and give us cold fusion, and we all live to 120, and famine's sorted out, and the whole world changes, okay? That's the only way. And even then, some people better be going to goddamn court. Do you know what I mean? But it would have to be a universal change, not a global change, not a national change. It would have to be something that shifts humanity in a direction we could never have fathomed. But instead, we're going to get space mold, bro. We're going to get space mold. That's what we're going to get. So that's why, you know, the bigger distraction had to be rolled out, I do believe.
I like that imagery, the break in case of emergency. And it's almost like the Trumpian dog whistle towards aliens straightened everybody up. He's like, I'm going to do it.
Going to do it.
Those beautiful aliens, I'm going to do it, you know.
These are my friends. But you can see him. You can literally just see him sitting there with his... Also, just while we're busting some chops here, his Sharpie does get bigger every time he signs a document in public, right?
And yeah, but I feel like he borrowed Hegseth's Sharpie. That's what I think happened.
Listen.
I think Hegseth has a large...
He's the only president that's done this, right?
With the Sharpie and the signing?
Like... That's not like a rule where the presidents have to use a Sharpie, because I don't think I've ever seen a signature that is so intently made to be like, just so you know, I have signed this. Do you know what I'm saying? He's using it.
Yeah.
It's massive. It's massive.
So the tradition started with John Hancock. That fool just walked up to the plate.
Okay.
Right. And he had absolutely zero respect for space on this document. Right. And so I think you can't say that was Trump as the first one. I think Hancock really
okay. So is that where this term "put your John Hancock on this" comes from?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
So did he have a mad signature? I need to look this up. Did John Hancock have a crazy signature?
You've got to look it up. Yeah. Like he shows up and everybody signs the dainty little signature on the Declaration.
I just want to see him sign one check. I just want to see him fill out a single check from the 90s. I just want to see how he would cope with that, because that ain't getting cashed. Okay, that is going to be like pixels zoomed in. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, look, we're side questing. But look, Ronald, anything else you want to tell us about, put to the audience, anything you've got coming up, anything you want to plug, let us know all about it. Your links are down in the description, of course, but anything else you want to let us know before we wind down?
Yeah, amazing. I've got a new book coming out. It's called Imperium. It's probably going to take a couple of months before it hits the market, but look forward to that. It's a World War II story, really discussing. It's a fiction, but it's showing how America's hands weren't entirely clean during the entire scenario of World War II. A lot of introspection, and based on some of the new research that's
just World War II.
I don't know that a lot.
Just World War II, is it?
Right. No, we can't. We can't hit all the wars just yet. That'll take a couple of books. But
that's going to be a series of books, bro. Is it since the dawn? Yeah. It'll start. The first book should start off since the dawn of creation and time. Okay, from when the white man landed in America, things went a bit. So anyway, I'm sorry. Carry on.
Definitely YouTube show off air. All the stuff that we've talked about, a lot of it's already been covered in separate episodes there. Mm. But then, as you know, the algorithms show us what they want to show us. If you want to see what I'm putting out, Substack is a great place to reach me. Frequent articles there. And then all the YouTube content gets on Substack as well. So feel free to hit me up and subscribe there. A lot of free stuff. I don't really need the paid subscribers on Substack. So just hit a subscribe or a follow. Man. Yeah. And they'll find me.
That's awesome, man. And look, I can tell you, we'll definitely have another conversation at some point, Ronald, because I'm probably going to process all of this and then need to give you a bit of a stern telling off for injecting this new fear into my brain. And also, I'm going to be checking out the UK ice hockey stuff. You were an actual like freaking hockey player, right?
I was a goalie for the Coventry Blaze. They used to sing in the stands, do run, run, run. That was the chant. They used to call me Ronnie. Check out the Coventry Blaze. Make sure you support the Blaze. That's my old team. There's a lot of guys playing some good hockey in the UK. It's a great sport, and I miss it quite a bit over there. But no, I love the conversation. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you for being here, your audience, for
tolerating this craziness.
Apologies again, because this was rescheduled. YouTube doesn't do notifications properly, and then I screwed up the second one trying to fix the first one. Awesome. But we'll see you again, Ronald. And I just want to say thank you to everyone at home. Thank you to the mod. Thank you to the Sean Edward channel. We'll see you all again very soon. I'm Ron Swanson. And for me, as always, guys, be safe out there. Peace.